You can read that, what we just sang, good portions of it in Revelation 5. Who is worthy to open the scroll? And it's the Lamb. The Lamb that was slain, Jesus. Amen. Well, we want to pick up a little bit on the Ten Commandments again this morning and kind of continue some of our conversation from last week and then move to the next big event that takes place with the nation of Israel, which would be both the giving of the law, but then the problem with the golden calf. And so that's a word of prayer, and then we'll jump into it. Father, just ask that you would guide our time this morning. As we think through the things that are in front of us and the challenges that the nation of Israel struggled with, the things that they failed with, but then, Father, as we also kind of examine ourselves, Father, we want to learn from him. Father, as we listen to history and understand history, we also want to learn from history. We don't want to repeat it. So, Father, guide our time, I ask. In Jesus' precious name, amen. So, as we talked about a little bit last week, and then also as we talked about in our life group this past week, God is doing more. When God is giving the Ten Commandments, God is doing more than just giving Ten Commandments. There's more at play. So again, what is God doing? So I want to go back and I want to reread those commandments. And we'll see them in Exodus 20. And we read these words. Then God spoke all these words, I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the place of slavery. Do not have other gods besides me. Command number one, do not make an idol for yourself, whether in the shape of anything in the heavens above or in the earth below or in the waters or under the earth. Do not bow down and worship to them and do not serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, bringing the consequences of the father's iniquity on the children to a third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing faithful love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commands. That was command number two. Do not misuse the name of the Lord your God, because the Lord will not leave anyone unpunished who misuses his name. Three, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. You are to labor 6 days and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You must not do any work, you, your son or daughter, your male or female servant, your livestock, or the resident alien who is within your city gates. Number four. For the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and everything in them in 6 days. He rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and declared it holy. Honor your mother and father, so that you may have a long life in the land the Lord is giving you. Lord your God is giving you. Five. Do not murder. Six. Do not commit adultery. Seven. Do not steal. Eight. Do not give false testimony against your neighbor. Nine. And do not cover your neighbor's house. Do not cover your neighbor's wife, his male or female servant, or his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. Ten. We have these Ten Commandments. And God is asking us, and God is expecting, particularly as he's giving this to the nation of Israel, God is expecting them to honor it. But God is not calling the nation out of Egypt. He's not calling the people of Israel out of Egypt, bringing them to the desert, bringing them to Mount Sinai, and just giving them these laws and expecting them to just kind of live by them. There's more at play. And you need to understand what is going on. Because last week we talked about how these Ten Commandments over history have been the foundation for Western society. You need to understand what God is now doing is that God is establishing a country. God is establishing a nation. When the people of Israel were in Egypt, they were a family. They were a large people group. But they did not yet function as a nation. Before they got into Egypt and they were Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the family unit, they were just functioning as an extended family unit. But when they came, when Joseph called his family, provided for his family came down, moved down to Egypt, and they all came down to Egypt. They got there, they were still just a large extended family. But during their time in Egypt, they multiplied and they multiplied and they multiplied. So as they're now leaving Egypt, there are a couple million people. A very large extended family. But God is doing something now different. He's not just calling a large family. He is establishing a nation. And he gives these Ten Commandments as the core values or the core commandments around which he places a series of other commandments. So we will look at this in a moment, but we won't go read through all of it. But all the way down to chapter 32, from chapter, 21, down through chapter 31, you see a whole series of commands. You see civil commands, societal framework, and then you also see God laying out the process and the framework for worship in the temple and appointing priests and all that kind of stuff. You see God laying all of this out. And God is establishing and God is creating a nation. So I want you to understand, these Ten Commandments were not just guidelines to shape individual life. These were guidelines that were intended to shape culture, to shape community, to help lay the framework and the undergirding principles that would allow culture and society and community to flourish and to do well. And these ten in particular sit underneath that to support that and help it flourish and succeed. And so when people don't do these ten things in particular, all the rest of the framework and all of the rest of the structure starts to crumble and fall apart, because these ten undergird it all. Now, this past week in Life Group, and it was fun, Winchester was up this week, we did some thinking to the future. We're going to talk about some of that. We're going to talk a lot about that at our communication meeting after church today. I really want to encourage you to be a part of that conversation. But we talked about some of this stuff a little bit. But this past week in Life Group, we asked this question. Look at the Ten Commandments. What are the one or two that stand out to you as the ones that our culture needs most today and, if honored, would have the most positive impact? It was great in our Life Group this week to talk about this and have some of this conversation. What was cool is we pretty much recognized that the first one, the Lord your God is one, and we should worship him and acknowledge him alone. We recognized that that was the primary one, but then we had some debate as to what the second most significant and primary one was. It was kind of a fun conversation, but what's going on in that conversation in our Life Group was recognizing that each really is significantly important. I was talking to Winchester on the way to the airport yesterday. He goes, well, it's the first and the second. You know, and I appreciated that perspective. He says, well, it's the first one because we need to love the Lord, and it's the second because if we have an idol, that leads us to all the other eight. Okay, and all the other problems and all the other things. So if we have an idol, then we have things out of line, we have things incorrect, and that's where the other eight really start to kick in. And we also recognize that in a little bit in chapter 32, what's going on? The nation establishes an idol. But it's not the only idol going on. The golden calf is not the only idol in play. But these commandments are really important. Now, we also talked last week how Paul said in Romans, the law killed me. The law killed me. Because it helped me to start to recognize that when I was jealous or when I was petty, or in particular, as Paul talks about this, when I covet and I start to covet something, God's law kicks in and says, you shall not covet, you shall not hunger or desire for what your neighbor has, and I'm looking at the stuff my neighbor has, and there's this covetous attitude or covetous desire that starts to kick off in me, and I recognize that this desire is sitting there, this desire is percolating inside of me, and it's tough to get rid of it, it killed me. It made me realize that I can't live up to God's standards. And again, this is why Jesus has come, isn't it? Jesus came to take our sin upon himself. Another fun conversation Winchester and I had on the way to the airport. He was talking about a guy who wrote a book. He said, I think the title of the book was something along the lines of Three Free Sins. Three free sins you can commit, you know, but they're not really free. Okay. But the whole play on that is the recognition that we all struggle, don't we? We all blow it. And if I were to ask you, who didn't blow it? Don't raise your hand. But if I was to ask you, who didn't blow it yet today? And you'd say, oh, me, I didn't blow it yet today. We would all know you're lying. Okay? Why? We fall short. We have sinful things that go on in the inside of us. It was fun. Winchester was relating that, and one woman goes, I don't like this at all. Blah, 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 blah. He says, well, I guess you might need 5 free cents. She just really wrestled. But the whole idea is, listen, recognize the reality in your journey that you are going to blow it. So recognizing that you're going to blow it, that now doesn't need to blow up your life. But you still need to pursue being the person that Jesus desires you to be. You still need to pursue being the kind of man or the kind of woman that God desires you to be. You still need to pursue that transformation journey of seeking to be conformed more and more and more on a daily basis after the image of Christ. But we also know that between here and eternity, we're never going to get it perfect. So we should not technically blow ourselves up for falling short, but that doesn't mean we give ourselves permission to indulge either. It's that tension point. That tension point. And God was not saying you have to do all of this and live it perfectly, because God knew we couldn't live it perfectly. And part of the reason for his giving of the law was to help us to come to that clarity of understanding, I have fallen short. And so it makes us more thoroughly aware and more prepared to respond to Jesus, because we are recognizing that I indeed am flawed. We all sin. We all fall short. We all need that Redeemer, Jesus. But also at the same time, these laws are really important. And when they work, and when they are applied, culture and community, saints and functions way better. Amen. When you are removing jealousy, now again, Jesus also changed some of the perception of these things, particularly as we look at murder and adultery. Because in this setting, they were very rigid. Well, I haven't committed adultery. I've looked at a bunch of women and like, you know, but I haven't crossed the line. Well, Jesus goes, no, dude, you have crossed the line. Okay? Or you say, I haven't killed anybody. I hate a few people's guts, and I can't stand them, and I want nothing to do with them, and if I can do anything to kind of get them, I'm going to get them, but I haven't murdered them. And Jesus comes back and says, no, no, no. You've already committed murder in your heart. You've already crossed the line. And as Jesus redefines some of our understanding, and Jesus is redefining from God's perspective, not from our perspective. But as we start to understand these laws, and as we start to understand these, how these undergird society, and man, when we learn to love people instead of hate people, when we learn to respect and honor people instead of hungering for them or treating them as tools or objects, but rather treat people as people, when we don't walk around desiring what everyone else has, but we work to attain, and we can set goals to achieve things that are important to us, And as you go through the laws and you look at all of these different things, when we learn the value of rest, instead of go, 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 learn the value to retreat, to think, to honor God. And when we put God first, how putting God first keeps things in balance and keeps things in perspective. When culture starts to function and honors these values and honors these commandments, culture starts to sing and culture starts to flourish. And so God is giving this framework, and God, He's seeking to establish a nation, and He's laying the undergirding supports to support society and to support community so that the nation of Israel will flourish. Interesting. Exodus 20, verse 21 says this. God gives these commands, the ten, but says, and the people remained standing at a distance as Moses approached the total darkness where God was. It's at this point in time that Moses goes up into the mountain, and when you continue to read, what you read and what you see is now God starting to map out a bunch of other expectations, a bunch of other civil laws and civil framework and structure. See, when we look at the Ten Commandments, we also need to recognize it's not just the Ten Commandments that are being given to the nation. There is so much more at this point in time that is being given to the nation. The Ten are the primary ones that undergird the whole. But then there is a whole other set and a whole other framework of rules and boundaries and structure and law that's given to help culture flourish. We'll just see part of it. I just want to read this one part because, you see, it's just an initial conversation of worship. He says, then the Lord told Moses, this is what you are to say to the Israelites. You have seen that I have spoken. And I won't go through all of this at this point because there's other stuff I'm going to read. But he starts to talk about particularly setting up an altar and worship. You have seen that I have spoken to you from heaven. Do not make gods of silver to rival me. Do not make gods of gold for yourselves. And it goes on talking about how they are to fashion an altar. And don't cut it. And don't do something. And don't raise it up. God is giving framework and structure. This is his intent. And then we see from chapters 21 to 23, civil components. Chapters 25 to 31, issues of the temple, the tabernacle, and worship. All these laws and all the structure is being given. God is seeking to establish a nation. It's all super important. Then 31:18 is important. When he finished speaking with Moses, talking about God, on Mount Sinai, he gave him two tablets of the testimony, stone tablets inscribed by the finger of God. We don't know exactly what was on those tablets. Was it just the Ten Commandments? Or was it a whole lot more? We don't really know, but God inscribed, and this is God inscribed, his testimony, the testimony of what was taking place on these tablets. This is important because we're going to come back to it in a moment. So God is establishing a nation. This is really important for us to understand. As God is giving these laws, as God is giving this structure, he is not just talking about these are the laws you need to follow. He is establishing a nation. So as you process that, recognize that these are not just guidelines for us to follow. These are guidelines for culture. I'll come back and make this statement then. So then as we talk in our culture, and people say, oh, the Ten Commandments don't apply. The Ten Commandments are irrelevant. Not really. If we would like our culture to function well, honoring and having them built upon the framework of those Ten Commandments makes a lot of sense. And in fact, much of our culture, Western culture, and the culture and the values of the United States were built on these commandments. It was built on it. It was the framework. This and Greek law were the framework of American laws. The framework from which our system of government came. Now, some of that began to change as they started to call laws, and as a nation, we started to shift. In the 30s and 40s, we started to shift from morality-based to legal-based. And so we started to shift from an understanding of morality, the framework of the Ten Commandments, to the framework of the laws. I'll give you an example. I told you guys a little bit ago that I got rear-ended a couple weeks ago and my car got totaled. So I've been looking for another car. Yes, it was not a happy moment. You know, thankfully, it wasn't hurt, all that kind of stuff. But I didn't enjoy it. So I'm in the process of looking for another car. And so I found a car that I think I'm interested in. And so I called up the dealership and I said, hey, I'm interested in this car. And I said, how much, what are you guys asking? And they gave me a price that was like $1,800 more than was on showing online. I said, time out. I said, I see the online price is this, but you just told me it's this. And I said, well, no, that's the online price, and that's the price if you finance. Okay? So if you finance, you get this deal, but if you pay cash, so if you finance, you get this deal, but if you pay cash, you get this deal. So this is literally the conversation I had in the car with Joan coming up to church this morning. Okay? So I'm telling Joan, I said, well, we're looking to get this car. It's a different car than I thought we were going to get, but that's okay. Good things about all that stuff. So, but I said, but we're going to finance. But we're only going to finance for like 4 months. And then after the 4 months, we'll pay it off. Because I said to the guy, I said to the salesman, I said, so, he said, but we'd like you to keep the finance and make the payments. I said, now, with all these loans, you can pay them off. There's no penalty for paying them off early, but we'd ask you to keep the loans for at least 3 to 4 months. And I said to him, I said, well, why 3 to 4 months? He says, well, after 3 months, we collect $950 from the company for financing. Okay? And so I said to the salesman, I said, okay, so you want me to finance? Okay, then I'll tell you what, I'll split the difference. So I'll finance, but I'll split the difference with you, and after 3 months, we'll pay the car off. Or 4 months, we'll pay the car off. I'm okay with that. You know, you bring the price down, I pay a little bit of interest, make the, you know. And Jones said to me, he says, is that legal? Is that ethical? Can you do that? And well, here's the deal. I said, Joan, I'm following the rules that they've established. Okay? It's really not the question of is it legal or unethical. I don't think it's unethical because it's the framework and the boundaries they've established. Okay? I'm following the rules. But what am I talking about? We have shifted from the conversation of asking is it ethical or unethical? Is it moral or immoral? And we have shifted to the conversation, is it legal? Are we following the rules that have been given, or are we breaking the rules that have been given? But it's all about whether or not we follow and keep the rules or not. And that shift has slowly been taking place in our culture. And the challenge that we wrestle with then as members of a culture that focuses on keeping the rules. First of all, you all wrestle with keeping the rules because you all want to break the rules because that's just hardwired in us, that sinful response. But the challenge, though, then, is for us to not function by rule keepers but asking questions of ethics and morality. And is this honoring God or doesn't this honor God? That's the challenging point that we go through. Now, by the way, do I think I dishonor God by following the rules? I don't think I dishonor God by following the rules. Because I'm playing within the rules that I've been given. Everyone understands those rules. And so I think I'm okay doing that. But you still have to ask those questions. You have to ask the questions of morality as opposed to just legality. And that's what our culture has lost. It's the question of morality. But God is creating laws, but underneath those laws is the issue of morality, not just legality. Because as we follow, the goal is not just to have a functioning society. The goal also is to have a functioning society that honors God. To have a functioning society that recognizes who God is and to recognize that He is worthy and deserving of worship. Because God is not just looking for the nation to survive and function as a nation. We will see in a moment. He's looking to establish a kingdom of priests. He's looking to establish a nation that acknowledges Him and worships Him and praises Him. But He also has these boundaries and these rules for them to follow that are issues of morality. So then as the other nations are around, watch them and see them, they see a nation that is flourishing, but a nation that just that they follow wonderful laws, but the substance of who they are is just such a transformed substance as well, that it just showcases the amazingness and the awesomeness of who God is, and it's just kind of becomes this amazing life billboard or sign or whatever it is you want to say that says God is cool, and when you honor Him and listen to Him and honor the framework of what He gives, life sings beautifully. We get to exist together beautifully, and we do all of that for His glory. We do all of that for His worship, and He is glorified and we are blessed. So God is doing so much more, but honoring the framework blesses us as well. And it helps to draw us into relationship with the Lord. Now we see the sin in the foolishness of the golden calf. So to put it in context, God comes down, declares the Ten Commandments. Who? Moses. We're intimidated, kind of freaked out. Moses, you go talk to God. We'll kind of hang back. You talk. We'll listen to you. It's scary to listen to God. Okay? Now, Moses listens to God. And you will find out as Moses listens to God, it's not scary. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. Moses flourishes because he's listening to God. And the challenge and one of the things that we should learn is we should learn to listen and walk with God, because when we listen and walk with God, it's beautiful and we flourish. But they wanted separation and distance. And because they wanted separation and distance, they didn't learn intimacy. They learned fear, but they didn't learn intimacy. And God wants us to fear Him, but it's not just the afraid, it's the reverence, it's the awe also that's a part of that. And Moses revered, and there was a fear that Moses had for God, but there was also this reverence and awe, and it drew him together, and he met with God face to face. So much that he glowed. He became so close to God, the glory of God started to leach into Moses. It was an amazing, beautiful thing to walk with that intimacy, but they said, no, we want to walk from a distance. And so Moses goes up to the mountain. We're going to read chapter 24 in a second. Now, what I don't know as I read through this, are we reading something that's linear? Like, he went up to the mountain, got this one set of laws, came down, established a covenant, then went back up to the mountain again for 40 days, and God gave the laws as far as worship and all that kind of stuff? Or is this kind of being told in a less than linear fashion, where he's kind of jumbling the story around a little bit? I really don't know. So was Moses up there 40 days and all this stuff? I don't know exactly. We know he was up there 40 days. Definitely he was up there 40 days after chapter 24. But what's going on? The nation of Israel gets impatient. By the way, that's another idol. Okay? The idol of wanting things right away. Got to get moving. We got to get it done. Sometimes that's an idol. We lack patience. But let's look at chapter 24. Because God establishes a covenant. So, and the nation agrees to the covenant. Look at chapter 24. It says, then he said to Moses, go up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab, Abihu, and 70 of Israel's elders, and bow and worship at a distance. Moses alone is to approach the Lord, but the others are not to approach, and the people are not to go up with him. Moses came and told the people all the commands of the Lord, and all the ordinances. Then all the people responded with a single voice, we will do everything that the Lord has commanded. Kind of write that in your brain for a little bit. We will do everything that the Lord has commanded. Not. But they say they will. Count on us. We will do it. We'll honor everything you said. Moses wrote down all the words of the Lord. Excuse me. He rose early the next morning and set up an altar and 12 pillars for the 12 tribes of Israel at the base of the mountain. Then he sent out young Israelite men, and they offered burnt offerings and sacrificed bulls as fellowship offerings to the Lord. Moses took half the blood and set it in basins, and the other half of blood he splattered on the altar. He then took the covenant scroll and read it aloud to the people. They responded, we will do and obey all that the Lord has commanded. So they're establishing the covenant. Moses took the blood, splattered it on the people, and said, this is the blood of the covenant that the Lord has made with you concerning all these words. Then Moses went up with Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and 70 of Israel's elders. And they saw the God of Israel. Beneath his feet was something like a pavement made of lapis lazuli, as I'm not sure I know what that is, as clear as the sky itself. And God did not harm the Israelite nobles. They saw him and they ate and they drank. The Lord said to Moses, come up to me on the mountain and stay there so that I may give to you stone tablets with the law and commandments I have written for their instruction. So Moses arose with his assistant Joshua and went up to the mountain of God. He told the elders, wait here for us until we return to you. Aaron and Hur are with you. Whoever has a dispute should go to them. When Moses went up to the mountain, the cloud covered it. The glory of the Lord settled on Mount Sinai. The cloud covered it for 6 days. On the seventh day, he called to Moses from the cloud. The appearance of the Lord's glory to the Israelites was like a consuming fire on the mountain. Now, just catch this. The appearance of the Lord's glory to the Israelites was like a consuming fire on the mountain. So the time that Moses is up on a mountain, the fire, okay, so God was leading them with a pillar of fire by day and a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. So they would see the manifestation, they would see the evidence of the presence of God. And now, God's presence is being manifested on Mount Sinai with this fiery presence on the mountaintop. So the presence and the evidence of the presence of God has not disappeared, has not dissipated as Moses is up on the mountain. This is an important thing to consider, okay? God is showing, I am up here. I am meeting with Moses. Moses entered the cloud as he went up the mountain, and he remained on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. We won't read all of this, but I'm going to drop down to chapter 30, 32, because then as you go through this from chapter 24 all the way down to 32, we see issues of worship, the temple, or in the tabernacle, and you read that and you'll see all the expectations and things that God is mapping out. So God is meeting on the mountain with Moses. The pillar of fire, the fiery presence is manifesting on the top of the mountain. People can see that. And Moses is up there for 40 days. Now, I want you to recognize that in chapter 32, verse 1, this is not after those 40 days have transpired. This is before those 40 days have transpired. But probably, like, I would guess around day 30, okay? When the people saw that Moses delayed in coming down from the mountain, they gathered around Aaron and said to him, "Come, make gods, plural, little g." And again, we talked about this a couple weeks, last week. I'll come back to these spots. People create gods. These gods are not real. Okay? But we create these gods. These things to which we dedicate ourselves. These things to which we give our lives. These things to which we give our fealty. And we say, these are our gods. And now, in our culture today, we talk about Zeus, we talk about Hermes, we talk about the Greek pantheon, we talk about some other various gods. But those are more for story. They're not really for serious worship and not really for serious adoration. But in our culture today, some of the idols that would be over here, those idols would be issues of lust. Those idols would be issues of power. Those idols would be issues of wealth. And we would have different idols over here, maybe not with a name or the face of a god, but we would have idols that would have other things on the pillar that we would worship, that we devote ourselves, that we give ourselves, and we spend our lives to pursue. And our culture spends its life to pursue. But these things that are over here are not real gods because they really cannot save. They don't have ears to hear. They don't have eyes to see. They don't have brains to think. They are inanimate. They don't exist. They are not gods, but they are still things that people create to give themselves to. Over here is the reality that God exists. He has eyes that see, he has ears that hear, he has a mind that thinks, and he sees and he hears and he knows everything. There's not a single thing that he misses. And you look around our world and you see all that he has fashioned, you see all that he has made, all of its intricacy, all of its beauty, all of the way it all just fits and the way it all just flows. And it's just amazing. And he's real. And this real God has come to the nation of Israel and said, "I want a relationship with you." And he's established a covenant with the nation of Israel. And they have said to him, "Real God, we will worship you and we will follow the rules. We will keep the covenant you have established with us. We will respect and honor the boundaries that you have given us." They are having this conversation with a real God who is manifesting himself in a real and a very tangible manner. But he's also having a conversation with Moses. But he's still revealing himself, and the manifestation of his presence is still seen on the mountain. But the people have become impatient. Moses has taken too long. Now, why would you say, "Andrew, it says that Moses was up there for 40 days. Why do you think it's probably around a 30-day mark?" Because Aaron still needs to collect all the gold, and he still needs to fashion the golden calf. That doesn't happen like this. As he said to Moses, he didn't throw it all into the pot and out came. Okay, he had to make it. So it took some time to make this thing. They're impatient. And they said, "Come, make gods for us who will go before us, because this Moses, the man who brought us from the land of Egypt, we don't know what's happened to him." That's true. They didn't know what's happened to him. It's been at least 30 days. But you see the mountain, you see the fire, you see still the evidence of the presence of God. We should be patient, and we should be waiting, but they don't. They're not patient. Incredible impatience with willful blindness, and as I said here, willful stupidity. Are you ever willfully stupid? I unfortunately periodically am. Three times a night, I do something stupid, and I come back, I say, Angie, that was so stupid. It was just stupid. We tend, at times, to be willfully stupid. I know it's maybe not a politically correct thing to say we're stupid at times, but we are. We just are incredibly foolish. We dumb. We do really dumb things, and sometimes we do those really dumb things on purpose. Willfully. Intentionally. Knowing it's dumb. Knowing it's stupid. It's like when we do this with our kids, right? And someone says, the sign says, hot. And we just got to touch it to see if it really does burn. Or it says, wet paint. We just, like, we really got to touch it to see if the paint really still is wet. Like, we should just, that's stupid. Those aren't smart things, those are dumb things. But we do that stuff. And the nation is being willfully rebellious. The nation is being willfully stupid. They've just entered in to the covenant with God. God has just revealed himself. They were talking with thunder, revealing himself with fire and smoke, and revealing himself in this incredible way. We'll keep the covenant. We will make the covenant with you. We'll follow all that it says. Now, Aaron, it's been a while. It's been 30 days. You got to make us something. Now, some of the commentators would say, you know, the calf was a powerful image. Because it was a powerful image of strength and fertility. Can I tell you something? Fire and smoke on the mountain, the ground shaking. God speaking from heaven with his loud voice. I got to think that's a little more something than this pathetic golden calf that Moses, or not Moses, that Aaron quickly put together. But as we wrestle through this, part of the challenge of listening to the history is taking the time to look at ourselves and say, man, when do we blow it like they do? And how do we avoid blowing it the way they do? We don't want to follow in the same mistakes. We don't want to follow in the same error. Then, have you waited for God to show up at different times and he hasn't shown up in the timeline that you have given him, and so you start to pursue your own solutions, you start to pursue your own agenda, you start to pursue your own answers because God's timeline didn't fit your timeline? And God says, wait, and you go, no. And God says, have patience, and you say, I'm out of it. They just weren't willing to wait for Moses to come back down the mountain. They assumed the worst instead of assuming the best of God. And part of what you need to understand is that God is presenting himself in a powerful and in a big way, but God is wanting the best for the nation. He's giving them the structures and the framework to flourish as a nation. He's giving the framework and the structures so that they will thrive and they will know life to fullness and richness and greatness, and they will be an example and a testimony to the awesomeness of God to the world if they will listen. But they're not exercising the patience to see it through. They're not exercising the willingness or the endurance to see it through. They have a super short attention span and a super, I'm having difficulty talking, super short, you know what I'm trying to say, a super short timeline that God can function in. There's a saying in leadership, you overestimate what you can accomplish in 1 year, but you often grossly underestimate what you can accomplish in five. And you can accomplish in 5 years so much more often than what you really think you can. But just identifying the value of the long run. of working a process and keeping it going and staying consistent. I'm getting an echo again, George. We need to be careful with that. We need to recognize that there's patience, and we are so short-term focused at times. And we give God just a short little window to function in. When if we are more patient with God and we're willing to let the long game run as God runs the long game, we would see that our lives flourish so much better, and we would be in such a happier place if we would let God's long game play out instead of being impatient. And the nation of Israel here were so impatient. Give us a God of gold that's mute, deaf, and dumb, and really does not exist except as a figment of imagination for us, instead of giving us the real deal. Satisfies the short-term temporary whims, but man, do they miss out on the long-term benefit. Incredible stupidity. Now, we see Moses' response. Then Moses turned and went down the mountain with the two tablets and the testimony in his hands. They were inscribed on both sides, inscribed front and back. The tablets were the work of God, and the writing was God's writing engraved on the tablets. When Joshua heard the sound of the people as they shouted, he said, "Moses, there is a sound of war in the camp." But Moses replied, "It's not the sound of a victory cry, and not the sound of the cry of defeat. I hear the sound of singing." He approached the camp and saw the calf and the dancing. Moses became enraged and threw the tablets out of his hand, smashing them at the base of the mountain. It says, he took the calf that they had made and burned it up. He ground it into powder and scattered the powder over the surface of the water and forced the Israelites to drink the water. We'll talk about that next week. But I want you to hear and recognize, he takes the tablets and he smashes them. Why? Because the nation has broken the covenant. They established and they agreed to the covenant in chapter 24. They walked through all that process and said, "Yes, we will honor the Lord, we will keep his statutes." And Moses goes to the mountain and God writes all the covenant down and clarifies the covenant. And then he comes down, and within 40 days, they've abandoned the covenant, and God and Moses smashed the tablets because the covenant was broken. Now, let's just quickly walk through Aaron's failures. And we'll talk about the nation of Israel next week. While on the mountain, Moses entrusted Israel's care into Aaron's hands. We read that a moment ago, but look again at 24:14. Exodus 24:14. He told the elders, "Wait here for us until we return to you. Aaron and Hur are here with you. Whoever has a dispute should go to them." He leaves the nation in Aaron's hands. And he blows it. He absolutely blows it. And he doesn't blow it because it's an accident. He doesn't blow it because he was incompetent to understand the circumstances. He blows it because he intentionally chooses to take an alternative path than the one Moses was leading toward and that God had established. He absolutely failed in his responsibility that was entrusted to him by Moses and also secondarily by God. God sets Aaron apart. So Moses is up on the mountain hearing from God. And in that conversation with God, God is setting Aaron apart and his sons to be priests and Aaron to be high priest. Look at chapter 28, verse 1. Part of that conversation is taking place on the mountain with God. "Have your brother Aaron with his sons come to you from the Israelites to serve me as priests. Aaron and his sons, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar." And then you continue to read on about how Aaron is the one that's set apart to lead that. He is the high priest. He is the one being called to lead the nation in worship of God. Jehovah, Yahweh, he is the one who's being called to lead the nation in the process of coming before the one true God. And as God is having this conversation with Moses, he's over here leading the nation to worship an idol. Aaron quickly surrenders to the pressure placed on him by the people. Look at verses, chapter 20, 32, verses 1 and 2. When the people saw what Moses delayed in coming down from the mountain. By the way, that's their perspective. Moses delayed. Something has waylaid Moses. No, Moses didn't delay, and Moses hasn't paused. He's having the conversation. Moses hasn't stopped. See, this is their perception. Moses was coming. Moses was going to be right here. Something has happened to Moses. No. That's not the case at all. Moses was coming in his timeline. You guys are just impatient for the outworking of his timeline. And he didn't tell you guys, I'll be right back. I'll be back tomorrow. No, he went up to meet with God. And he was doing perfectly fine in his timeline. It was their perception that he was delayed. It was their perception that he got sidetracked or something interfered. None of that was true. Their perceptions were inaccurate. Their perceptions were lies. These were lies they were telling themselves. By the way, does that ever happen to you? You start to create a fabrication of a perception of what's happening in a situation. We often do this when we have a conversation, we have a little tension with somebody, and we start to have these internal conversations with ourselves. And we think of all the things that this person is thinking towards us, and so then we create all of these arguments towards that person so that we're right to kind of be angry and grumpy and crabby and to have something against them so that we're ready to contend, you know. And all of a sudden we have this conversation, and none of the stuff that we think they're thinking. Everything, all this self-talk and all this internal conversation we're having, none of it's real. And that's what's going on here. Oh, they have all this anxiety and all this stress and all this concern that something's happened to Moses. And Moses is totally good. He's meeting with God. It's all good. It's all good. I don't know why you guys are stressing. God's just having a conversation with you. I'll be down when I'm done. You ever do this with your parents? If you can remember back that far. We'll be home a little bit later. 7 o'clock comes. What's happening to mom? What's happening to dad? Did they have a car accident? Did they get stuck? They fall? You know, they have a... They pull in around 9:30, 10 o'clock. And, hey, how are you guys doing? Oh, we're so worried for you. Well, what are you all worried about? It was fine. We were... You know, what were you stressed about? Who are you worried? I said, who told you it was going to be home at 7? This is what's going on. They gathered around Aaron and said to him, come, make gods for us who will go before us, because this Moses, the man who brought us up from the land of Egypt, we don't know what's happened to him. Like this Moses, like, it just kind of blows your mind. And so Aaron replied to them, take off the gold rings that are on your ears of your wives, your sons, your daughters, and bring them to me. Aaron so quickly surrenders to the pressure placed on him by the people. A little bit of pressure, a big cave. Not a redirection. No, guys, be patient. He's having a conversation with God. When he's done, he'll come. Oh, no, no, no. He just so quickly caves. How about the next one? Verses 3 and 4. So all the people took off their gold rings that were on their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he took the gold from them and fashioned it with an engraving tool and made it into an image of a calf. Then they said, Israel, these are your gods who brought you up from the land of Egypt. blow your brain. I mean, Moses is there standing Aaron is standing there next to Moses in Egypt.
Let my people go.
And he's the voice piece for Moses because Moses doesn't always want to talk out loud. He's the voice of God to Pharaoh. Let my people go. Yahweh says, let my people go. And here, he's not just saying, yeah, he's fashioning the idol. He's creating the idol. And then he declares that this idol is the God that has taken you out of Egypt, knowing full well it isn't. Blow your mind. But we're not done. Look at verse 5. When Aaron saw this, he built an altar in front of it and made an announcement. There will be a festival to Yahweh tomorrow. As though worshiping the idol, when he has already just told everyone, make no graven image of anything above or below or on the earth. No idols. Don't have any idols. And yet he's fashioning this idol and says, hey guys, we're going to worship this idol as though we're worshiping Yahweh. He blasphemes God by calling them to worship an idol. And then catch this next part. Blows me away. Chapter 32, verses 21 to 24. Then Moses asked Aaron, what did these people do to you that you have led them into such a grave sin? Don't be enraged, my Lord. Don't be ticked off. Woo! You yourself know that the people are intent on evil. Not me. Not my fault. They said to me, make gods for us who will go before us because this Moses, the man who brought us up from the land of Egypt, we don't know what's happened to him. See, it's your fault because you took so long having a conversation with God. God, Moses, these people are stubborn. And you took too long. It's not my fault. Moses, it's you and it's them. It's God, not me. And when I threw it into the fire, out came the calf. It was a miracle. Man, does that ever happen to you? When you're confronted and you deflect and deflect and deflect, when God puts his fingers on things, you don't look in a mirror and you don't exercise honesty? A couple questions for you to think through. Before we join the finger pointers, how do we at times behave like Israel and Aaron? As we have this conversation, it is easy for us to point the fingers. The challenge for us is to look at ourselves and to learn from what is taking place so that we don't make the same mistakes they do. So how do we behave at times like Israel and Aaron? And then this next one. How do we nurture Moses' passion and devotion while also avoiding Israel and Aaron's sinful failing? We don't want to become like Israel, and we don't want to be like Aaron. We want to be righteous and pure before God. So then how do we nurture that which helps us to become more and more like Jesus? So that we can avoid the other. But don't forget, are you going to blow it tomorrow? Yes. Probably. Pray for her. Yes, we are. We're going to blow it on Tuesday? Yes. We're going to blow it on Wednesday? Yes. We are. So don't let those times when we blow it become the cause of defeat. But rather recognize we want to pursue being who Jesus wants us to be. Allow the values that he is seeking to call us to live and call that faith that he's calling us to live out, learn to allow that to undergird our journey so we progress. Still can't talk. So that we progressively become more and more of who Jesus desires us to be. Knowing that in that journey, there is a constant series of falls and misses and disappointments. But all of that is overcome as we continue to pursue being who Jesus desires us to be. We look at these stories, we look at these pieces of history, and it blows our brain that they were so foolish, so sinful, so stupid. But we also need to look in a mirror because we are inclined towards those same types of patterns. And the challenge is for us to embrace Jesus and to be transformed, because just as Jesus, just as God wanted the nation to be an example, he wants us to be that example. He wants us to be that salt and light that shines in our culture and that lets people know that Jesus does something different. And Jesus offers something different and something better than what our world offers. Hanging out over here is way better than hanging out over there. Being shaped by all that takes place over here is way better than being shaped by what takes place over there. We're still in process. So we shouldn't be quick to point fingers and we shouldn't be quick to throw stones. But we should be quick to learn, to be honest, so that we can pursue being transformed after the image of Christ. Let's pray together. Father, I want to say thank you so very much for your word and for the continued example that it gives. The continued challenge to walk with you, to know you. Father, I'd ask you to help us to learn and then be transformed and not doing it our strength, but learning to really rest in you. Father, be at work, I ask, in Jesus' precious name. Amen. Just a reminder, they're going to receive an offering. It's going to come from the back.